You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host today, Connor Dunning, former Memphis videographer. You can find me on Twitter at CDunning929. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning and I should pop up. We've got a full 3-hour Valentine's Day show for you today. We're going to open here in just a few moments on the Memphis Tigers' double-digit win over South Florida. You hear that, George? Double-digit win.
Love to hear it.
Double-digit win. You absolutely love to see it. And Dane Danger's continued excellent play. We are at NBA All-Star break, which means we need to do Grizzlies player grades for the first part of the NBA season. We'll knock that out around 4:30. CBS Sports' David Cobb will join us, as he always does, at 5 p.m. to talk about number 1 Auburn versus number 2 Alabama, Memphis basketball, and Jeff Borzello's penny piece. And I'm going to ask him a couple of Grizzlies questions as we are heading into All-Star Weekend. I'm also going to ask him how he thinks the NBA All-Star Weekend could and should improve. At 5:30, I'm going to let George off the leash and allow him to talk about their Aaron Rodgers era in New York with his Jets. At 5:45, we will do a special Valentine's Day edition of Small Talk by doing our top 5 Valentine's Day movies. And I need to be very clear here. The criteria is movies you can watch on Valentine's Day, not movies that have to take place on Valentine's Day, because there's, oddly enough, not that many that actually take place on Valentine's Day. And if we're being completely honest, they're not that good. So these are movies that you could watch on Valentine's Day. Fellas, if you're looking for an activity tonight after you go to dinner, after you wine and dine your beautiful lady, your beautiful partner, go watch a movie. It's the best way to wind down. We're going to give you a top 5 list so that you can do that. Parker Fleming's going to join us for his second appearance of the week at 6 o'clock to review the Memphis Grizzlies' first half of the season. He also has a new piece over on Substack Elitist, the Grizzlies' free Substack covering the Grizzlies and the NBA draft. Highly recommend you go check that out. All proceeds go to St. Jude through Allie's Ally, so make sure you are subscribed to that. Parker today suggested a few ways to improve not only the All-Star game, the in-season tournament, but the NBA season as a whole. So we're going to talk to him about that. Then we'll do the Blitz covering just another injury for the Dallas Mavericks. And then today, a fun topic of conversation that happened during the game last night is Penny's all-time team. Who is my starting 5 for the Penny Hardaway era at Memphis, and who is my 6th man? We'll do that in the Blitz, and then we'll do the rewind and get out of here. I already mentioned him. As always, I'm joined by the Honorable King George, Costco George, and yes, Italian George. You can find him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. He is George Ruggiero. George, what's up, my friend?
How are you doing? It feels like it's been a while since I've been here in the afternoon.
You and I haven't done a show since December, I think since before Christmas break.
Yeah, so it's been a minute.
I think our last show was probably the 22nd or the 23rd of December, so it's been a minute. We did shows for 2 months together, and then I haven't been able to see you much since.
I know. Our great listeners here have been able to hear me this week with Jeffrey, handling Jeff Calkins'
show. And you did a great job last week at our live event.
That was a great time. It was enjoyable.
I do need to ask you, George.
Yes.
So when we were doing shows together, I wasn't calling you Italian George. That didn't. No. I need to make this very clear.
That's
that didn't
Gabe.
Come from me.
Gabe did that.
You are the Honorable King George and Costco George, two monikers I think you have earned. Are you okay with Italian George? Do we have to all go to HR? How's
no.
this? Is this good?
So, I am totally fine with it. I don't mind it. Again, not you. You did not do this. This is Gabe's fault.
Uh-huh.
This is
Gabe's fault.
This happened during one of Gabe's, off-season appearances, his paternity leave appearances on the show. He's like, we've got Italian George in the booth over there. I was like, it's on the nose. I mean, it's not unfair. It's true.
Italian George is better than what Brad called you last week. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
Which time?
When he called you George the Italian, one sounds a little bit... That's a little bit more Goodfellas. That's like, hey, you know, get the papers. George the Italian over there, yeah?
Exactly. You know, that's one where I'm like, I'm fine with Italian George. That makes sense. George the Italian, I'm like, okay, do I need to start wearing like a pinstripe suit?
Right.
Or like... How many different suits do I need to buy for this? Or
every time you walk into a room, Frank Sinatra just starts playing.
I'd be okay with that.
I mean,
if I had a theme song, that'd be beyond my pay grade. I'll say that much.
Well, George, I am very happy that you are with me today. We're going to have a fun show today, but we do have to start with the Memphis Tigers picking up a win last night against South Florida. And hey, look at that. They won by double digits. Penny Hardaway was also able to secure win 150. Penny Hardaway has picked up his 150 win of the Memphis era. Memphis won by 15. Do you know what KenPom projected them to win by, George?
If I recall, because I think we talked about this, I want to say it was 10?
10. They projected the Tigers to win by 10, and the Tigers ended up winning by 15. It was a dominant performance from the Memphis Tigers. This game was over pretty early in the first half. They closed the first half leading 42-27. There was a moment in it where, you know, the Tigers were down by a little bit, but Dane Danger scored 20 points, and Memphis extended its winning streak to 8 games with an 80-65 victory over South Florida Thursday night. P.J. Haggerty scored 18 points, and Tyrese Hunter being back in this game added 15 points and 6 rebounds for the Tigers. The Tigers are now 21-4 and 11-1 in the American Athletic Conference. Like I said, early in the first half, there was a moment where Memphis did trail 17-15 midway through the first, but they went on an 8-0 run, and by the end of the first half, it was pretty clear that the Tigers were going to win this game. In the second half, they led by as many as 24, and then, you know, they kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit, and that's why South Florida was able to get it within 15. It could have been a 20-point win. It would have been great. The metrics would have certainly liked it. We're going to talk about that in just a moment, though, because I'm kind of tired of this whole metric conversation. It's driving me insane how it does feel like the Memphis Tigers are being held to a bit of a different standard, I think, than the rest of the teams in college basketball. I understand that, you know, numbers never lie and things like that, but a couple of Tiger fans have on Twitter asked some of the people in charge of metrics why your metrics are this way, and some of the answers just don't make a lot of sense to me. At the end of the day in college basketball, you're supposed to win games. That is what you're supposed to do. The Tigers, again, are 21-4. They are 11-1 in the American. Has every single one of those wins been pretty? No, but a lot of those wins have been by 8-plus or more. That is all I can ask of this Memphis Tigers team. What did we want heading into this season? We wanted a drama-free season. We wanted them to do very well in the non-con, and we wanted them to take care of business in the conference schedule. They have done all of those things. Go read the Jeff Borzillo piece that was released yesterday. Fantastic piece over on ESPN, talking about Penny Hardaway, talking about this team, talking about how he constructed this team with high-character guys, how he had to take some accountability with the team this year and from the mistakes that he had last year and the lessons he learned from that team and how he applied those lessons to this year. So far, it's looked great. I've had a really enjoyable time watching this Memphis Tigers basketball team play. Again, has it been perfect? No. Has this team had a couple of low points? Yes. Like, they dropped that game. They shouldn't have. They should be undefeated in the conference, but they're not. And they had such a great run in their non-con schedule, they had a bit of a safety net there. What just bothers me, I think, is that there's almost this expectation that if the Tigers don't go undefeated or if they don't win out the rest of the conference, they might drop to a 7-8 seed. And I just don't think that is how things should be operating this year in college basketball. The Tigers are clearly one of the best 25 teams in the country. I would argue a top 15 team based on their non-con schedule. Right now, they are ranked number 14. That is where they probably should be. Tonight is going to be really interesting, because we are going to get a Sweet 16 predictor type of deal, like a top 16 seeds. And I think what's bothersome is I don't know if the Tigers are going to be in that. I don't know if they're going to be in it because of their conference schedule, because they are 7-2 in quad three. That is where it hurts them. Both, like, two of their losses this season have come to quad three opponents. That is going to drag them down a little bit. But when you look at the Tigers, they are 10-2 in quad one and quad two games. 10-2, one of the best teams in the country. And a huge difference from last year this year for the Memphis Tigers is those wins aren't aging like spoiled milk. They're aging beautifully. UConn figured it out. That was a huge thing for the Memphis Tigers. Michigan State is one of the better teams in the country. They are hot right now. The Tigers beat those teams. Clemson. Clemson keeps picking up big wins. Shout out to Clemson. You know, we talked about it, George, when you were on with me way back when. It was right after the Tigers beat UConn. What did we say? Listen, Dan Hurley might be a lunatic. He might be a bit of an a-hole. But you know what we have to do? We got to root for Dan Hurley. We got to root for UConn. And they've held their end of the bargain. They've gone out there and won basketball games.
For the most part.
For the most part. But they're doing what they're supposed to do. The wins for the Tigers have aged well. And that's why it's bothersome to me that every single game we have to talk about, well, did they win? Did they win by double digits? Did they win by as many points as KenPom projected them to win? Here's where I've gotten at this point in the season, all right, y'all? The Tigers just got to take care of business. Listen, they have got a shot to win out in the rest of their conference schedule. They might drop one. They might drop one. But they've got a shot to win out. They are playing really good basketball right now. They are playing as a team. They are healthy. P.J. Haggerty is one of the best players we have in the Penny Hardaway era. He has been a thrill to watch. There is no way in hell he's not going to win Conference Player of the Year. He absolutely should. If he doesn't, we are going to riot because that would just be a horrific decision if he doesn't win. He needs to win Conference Player of the Year. But it just feels like that Memphis' past history in this dog conference is holding them back. And I'm not sure that's 100% fair to Memphis. They have played very good basketball this year. The goal of basketball games is to what? Win the games. Win the games. And you know what Memphis has done? 21 out of 25 times, they've won those games. Did two of those losses come to a quad three team? Yes, they did. Yes, they did. But it's not like they got blown out.
No.
It's not like they got blown out. They had bad games.
You know what the crazy thing is about all of that we're talking about? Cool. Two of their, I guess this kind of also comes across in a similar way to like the way that I feel like some of these metrics and these rankings are treating the Tigers, and it's a little bit disingenuous. Oh, man, but 50% of their losses were quad three losses. Yeah, they've lost four games.
They lost four games.
They've lost four games. And we're talking about this team like it shouldn't be, or some people are, that it could or shouldn't be a pretty high seed come tournament time. I don't know how this team, unless they go on some sort of a horrific end of their season, I don't know how they aren't a top four, maybe top five seed in the tournament.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next. It is, you know, again, tonight we are going to kind of get this top 16 release. We're going to figure out where people view the Tigers. In my opinion right now, the Tigers should probably be slotted somewhere between 4 and 5. I think they should be a 4 and 5 seed. If they win out the rest of the conference, they should be a 4 seed. No doubt in my mind, they should be a 4 seed. I can understand a 5 seed, though. My fear is, though, is that these metrics are going to hold them back. Because to your point, when you go and you look at their quad victories, quad 1, they're 5-2. Quad 2, they're 5-0. But it's that quad 3, they are 7-2 with an 72-85 loss to Arkansas State, and then they lost 81-88.
That first
to
one's
Temple.
The big one.
Arkansas State's the big one. That's the one that drags you down.
Because that one isn't going to change, in my opinion. That one does not have the potential.
Temple's bad too, though.
Temple's not good. I'm not saying they are. And you did end up splitting the season series with them, which, you know, after the loss, you would hope that they would be able to rectify that with a win, and they did. But that's a team that, at that time, when that loss happened, if I remember correctly, that was a quad two loss,
yes,
not a quad three loss. So
Arkansas State was a quad two loss at the time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. They are 88 right now. They are 88 right now. So they are outside of quad two right now. And that's just, you know, that's tough.
That is tough. I mean, for it to be, because to me, that's close. That's, you know, right on that bubble. I wonder, though, because I don't know about this selection show or, you know, preview that they're doing tonight. Are they doing like a bubble are they doing? Yeah. Do you think it's going to be like, okay, here are our top four in each, you know, section, and then here are the guy the teams that are probably, you know, right on that cusp? Because if they end up being in that bubble, you have to look at it and say, okay, they have every opportunity if they take care of business, be that by 1 point or 15 points, that should get them into that top 16.
Yeah. Well, the Tigers have 6 games left this season. And to be quite honest, they should win all of these games. There's one quad two game in there with UAB.
Mm-hmm. Is that all, that's on the road as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's on the road. But here are the games that they have upcoming. They've got Wichita State, Florida Atlantic. Wichita State is a quad three. Florida Atlantic, FAU is a quad three. Rice, quad four. Cannot lose that game.
No.
That is the one. Cannot lose that one. Everything that we are saying goes out the window if they lose a quad four game. Absolutely can't lose that one. UAB, again, another quad two opportunity there. UTSA, and then you end the season with South Florida. Again, I think that the Tigers have a really good chance to win out for the rest of the season.
Absolutely.
And again, if they do, I just think that that means that they should be a four seed. They've earned it. I think Penny Hardaway has earned it. The lessons that they learned from last season, they have 100% applied to this year's team. Again, are they perfect? No, they're not perfect. They turn the ball over a lot still. They can struggle with rebounding, but last night that certainly was not a problem whatsoever. They absolutely destroyed them on the glass last night. They out-rebounded South Florida 51-34, and I think the entire team deserves a lot of credit there. The entire team rebounded well. Team rebounding. Gabe and I have been talking about the last few weeks. That is one of the areas in which the Tigers have to step up, and they certainly did that last night. They outscored South Florida 16-4 on second chance points, and it's one of the big differences in the game. A couple of guys deserve a lot of credit there. You know, Nick Jourdain, after that loss, got a lot of criticism after that loss to Temple, because it just seemed like, you know, he wasn't putting in the work that you would hope that he did. And he was one of the players that was really highlighted in this Jeff Porzello piece, and I thought he had a couple really good quotes in there. Again, highly recommend people to go read that. You kind of get some insights to Penny Hardaway and this Memphis Tigers basketball team. To be quite honest, I enjoyed reading it, because a lot of the things that we've been talking about on air the last year about this Tigers team were kind of confirmed in that piece. So again, highly recommend people going to check that out. But last night, Nick Jourdain, he only had 2 points, but he really showed up in the hustle stats. He had 9 rebounds, 2 offensive, 7 defensive. He had 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. That's the type of activity that you need from Nick Jourdain. I don't necessarily think we need to depend on him in terms of scoring the basketball when you've got guys like Dane Danger, PJ Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, Colby Rogers, PJ Carter. Those guys, they can pick up the scoring. But if Nicholas Jourdain can be your dirty work guy, if he can be your quote-unquote glue guy, that's going to go a long way for this Memphis Tigers team. And then last night, again, the man has stepped up since being inserted into the starting lineup. And again, I hope he stays in the starting lineup. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. Dane Danger. How great has Dane Danger been this year for the Memphis Tigers, specifically as a starter? Last night, he was 9 of 13 from the field. He had 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. His footwork in the paint is some of the best I've seen in college basketball. If you throw him the ball down there, he knows what his job is. It's to go get a bucket. And I think that he has felt more comfortable in the starting lineup. He's not trying to force too many things. And in the opportunities and in those moments where he feels like the defense is doubling him, he has found ways to pass out of it. And really, I think what we started seeing is that when he was coming off the bench and he was playing more bench guys and they were doubling him, he didn't have somebody to pass it to every single time. And I think that what we've seen with him in the starting lineup is he's had a bit of a release valve, because PJ Haggerty is out there with him a lot. So the teams aren't double teaming him as much. So he's absolutely cooking guys that are trying to defend him one-on-one. He's really enjoyable to watch. Again, his footwork, it is premier right now in college basketball. Dane Danger knows how to score the basketball. He's going to be a big piece for this Memphis Tigers team down the stretch and in the tournament. It was really nice to see Tyrese Hunter back last night. I'm glad his knee is looking okay. He didn't shoot the ball, you know, too well from the field, but he did knock down 3 threes, and that's what you love to see from him. He had 15 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. Tyrese Hunter, I think that he is the vocal leader of this team, because PJ Haggerty, although he is clearly their best player, he seems like a little bit more reserved, a little bit more quiet. Tyrese Hunter, in my opinion, is the leader of this team, and I think he's been massively important. The bench stepped up again last night, too, in a way. Musa Cisse, how about that? 9-7. 9-7 from Musa. You absolutely love to see it. PJ Carter didn't have a great game last night, but he did knock down a 3. And then, again, I just mentioned him, PJ Haggerty showed up like he does every single night for you. He had 18 points. The one area of improvement I would say that the Tigers need to work on from last night's game, free throws. They were 17 of 30 from the free throw line. And last night, it didn't necessarily matter because, again, you did win the game by 15 points, but you could have won the game by a lot more if you knocked down a couple more free throws. That is one thing to keep an eye on for this Memphis Tigers team. There have been three things this season that you've had to keep an eye on for this Tigers team. Free throws is one of them, rebounding is one of them, and the turnovers is one of them. If they can keep those three things at bay, if they can shoot well from the free throw line, if they can rebound the basketball as a team, because they don't have like a plus rebounder necessarily. They don't have one guy who's just like, my main thing is rebounding the basketball. They don't have a specialist in that role, but they've got to do team rebounding, and that's what they did last night. When you go and you look at it, Nick Jourdain, 9 rebounds. Dane Danger, 7 rebounds. PJ Haggerty, 6. Tyrese Hunter, 6. Kobe Rogers, 2. Dante Harris, 4. Musa Cisse, 7. PJ Carter, 4. Every single player that got in there was able to bring down a rebound. But then, yeah, the turnovers is the big thing, and it was nice last night for them to only have 12 turnovers, had 15 assists. You always want to have more assists than turnovers. That's basic basketball right now, right there. I'm not teaching you anything new. Yeah. But this Tigers team went out there, and they took care of business. They beat this team by double digits. They beat them more than the metrics were saying that it was. I just think that this team deserves a 4 or 5 seed. I expect them to be able to win the rest of their conference games. I do think that there is an opportunity for them to maybe drop one to a team like UAB. If that happens, again, that will be a quad 2 loss. Not the worst thing in the world, but it is in the American. So you're going to get killed for that. It's just that is the unfortunate reality of Memphis and the conference they are in. And it is why we have had conversations just this week about the Big East and Patino and yes. Could Memphis get into the Big East? Could they do a basketball only? And maybe it's a bit complicated. I'm not sure it's actually doable. But I do think that every single Tigers fan, and I think the Tigers in general this season, are realizing that this conference just kind of, it holds you back. It holds you back because it truly is terrible. It's just a terrible conference. And John Martin said it this week on the show when he was on with Gabe Kuhn. I thought it was a fantastic point that he brought up. There's just no future for it.
No.
There's no future for this conference whatsoever. Memphis is the only team that has any sort of future in this conference. Really. And you can just go look at the tweets from the schools when Memphis is coming to town. It's their Super Bowl every single time. Whiteouts, blackouts, sold out crowds. This is the game we've been waiting for all year. The Memphis Tigers are coming to town. They have to take everybody's best shot in this conference every night, and they've only dropped the ball once. Has every game been pretty? No, that's not what I'm saying. Am I saying this Tigers team is perfect? No. But point to me a team in college basketball that is perfect. Point me to that team. You're not going to be able to.
Can't do it.
Even this weekend, we got number one versus number two, Auburn versus Alabama. We've seen those teams trip up this season. This Tigers team, go look at their non-con. Go look at their neutral site victories. They are one of the best 15 teams in this country, and they deserve to be seeded as such. It's just driving me nuts that after every single win right now, we're like, whoa, did they win by enough? They won the basketball game. That is the goal of basketball. Correct me if I'm wrong, but a win doesn't count any more or less because of how much you won by. But for some reason in college basketball with the Memphis Tigers, that is the end-all be-all of the last few weeks. It is entirely frustrating. I understand that it is how these things work, but David Cobb, I'll talk to him about it a little bit later. He's talked about it before. His hope is that if the Tigers win these last 6 games, they win out in this conference, the metrics will fix themselves because you have to reward a team like the Memphis Tigers. They are having a fantastic season this year. They are on pace to maybe have the best season of the Penny Hardaway era. He deserves a lot of credit. This Tigers team deserves a lot of credit, and they deserve to be seeded correctly, not just because of the conference they're in. They shouldn't be dogged because of the dog conference they're in. Look at their record, specifically against the very good teams. Again, 10-2 in Quad 1 and Quad 2. 10-2.
And the other thing is, we also talk about that. Who are those quad one and quad two losses? Well, you even said it. It's not a quad two loss. There are no quad two losses.
No quad two losses.
They're only quad one
losses.
They lost
to Auburn and Mississippi State.
Yeah, as in two teams in the SEC, and I understand that Mississippi State, since starting conference play, has started to fall off quite a bit. That loss is not looking nearly as peachy as a lot of these wins are looking at this point, but what's been the conversation around college basketball all of this season? Man, the SEC all of a sudden looks really, really good, kind of top to bottom. I mean, you're getting a lot of quality teams out of that conference. And the fact that you beat one, lost to two, and one of them being the number one team in the country at this point, I don't know how that doesn't benefit or in a way make up more for this, as you've said, this dog in conference schedule, because that's exactly what it is. There's nothing to gain and all to lose for Memphis in this conference. I would love it if they somehow were able to figure it out and go play a St. John's, a Marquette, a Creighton multiple times a season. Do you know how fun that would be?
It'd be awesome.
Not just imagine those teams also getting to come here, let alone getting to go on the road to play in stores. That would just be incredible basketball.
I don't think there'd be attendance conversation to say, because those games,
zero.
Even though some of those teams aren't what they used to be, like Georgetown, the history is there.
Absolutely.
There is historic relevance to these teams. It would just be more fun. I mean, it's better than Rice. It's better than Rice being in your building. There's no doubt about it.
Getting to host Penny versus Shaka Smart.
Right.
Oh, man. It would be awesome.
It would be a lot of fun. It would be a lot of fun. But again, you know, the Tigers, 10-2, quad one and quad two. There are two losses in quad one to the number one team in the country, Auburn, and then to Mississippi State, who has over a 95% chance of making the tournament right now. When you look at the SEC, eight teams have a 95% chance of making it. And then the ninth team, Mizzou, 94%.
Yeah.
The SEC is unreal this year, and two of your losses in quad one are two SEC schools. But you also have another win against Ole Miss from the SEC.
Who's
you also have a win against
better.
Missouri from the SEC.
Look, that win is aging like fine wine. Both of those wins are.
Yeah, you know, all of the wins are. Missouri, UConn, Michigan State, Clemson, Ole Miss.
Jeffrey and I talked about this during the week. Is that win against Clemson on the road turning out to be the Tigers' best win this season? A true on-the-road test morning game against a team that is turning out to be one of the, I don't want to say one of the only good teams in the Atlantic, but one of the best teams in the ACC, which is historically a basketball conference. That might turn out to be their
Maybe
best
so.
Win. Because
that, when they beat Duke, I was like, I almost wore orange the next day. I was like, let's go, Clemson. That was huge when they beat Duke.
Exactly. So, for one, all of the conferences this year, especially we're looking SEC, Big Ten, ACC, the Big East, they're cannibalizing themselves. All of these losses, you know, I understand the joke. Did you see that clip of Mark Pope about the reporter, the young reporter asking him, how does it feel knowing that since starting conference play, the SEC is 500?
That is nuts, though.
It was so crazy. It was so much fun, but the way that these teams are playing, the best teams are winning and losing to not just the best teams, but look at Texas getting big wins. Look at Vanderbilt getting big wins. Look at Clemson turning out to be one of the best teams in the conference when that wasn't what we thought when the season started. It's almost like there's a major shift happening. And I don't want to see Memphis left by the wayside. I don't think there's a way that they can be, especially if they continue to win, no matter what conference it is.
It's just so odd that it feels like some of these massive wins that Memphis has aren't weighted the same way as the losses. Like a win over Clemson or a win over UConn or Michigan State. People recognize them as being excellent, but for some reason, a loss to Arkansas State is the end of the world for a team like Memphis. When I can go through college basketball and I can point out a bad loss for almost every single team in the top 25. Like that is what happens in college basketball. You can't be perfect every single night, but Memphis has been very, very good most nights, and I just think that they should be rewarded for actually winning games. I understand that the metrics say that they should be winning by a certain thing. I get it. But the fact that they have won eight games in a row and they've gone down in the metrics makes no sense to me. That I need that to be explained to me. That doesn't make any sense. They're winning basketball games. They're doing what they're supposed to do, but it's just not by enough. So we're going to drop them. I think they've dropped like nine spots or something like that. It's just been frustrating because last season, by this point, everything was on fire. It was awful by this time last season. That hasn't happened this year. And it's almost like there's this expectation that it's going to fall apart. And listen, I might have to eat my words. These last six games, who knows? Maybe it does go horrifically. We just don't really have any signs of that right now. We knew that that's the direction it was going by this time last year. I just think that Penny and this year's Memphis Tigers team is being punished because of a horrific conference that they are in and because of the past sins. And I'm just not sure the sins of previous teams should be applied to this year's team when it's been a 180. It's been a 180. There's been little to no drama this year. When Tyreek Smith popped up, he was like, get out. He was like, we're going to cut that out. We don't need that anymore. He talked about that in the Jeff Porzello piece. And then I'm going to leave everybody before we throw it to a break here and come back and grade the Memphis Grizzlies this season. This was a fun stat that I found today. Schools to have 11 wins in football during the 2024 season and 21 wins in basketball during the 2024-25 season. There's only one school, George. You know what that school is?
I do know.
Memphis. It's been a pretty damn good year for Memphis athletics. So it's a good time to be a Memphis Tiger. Let's hope that these last six games go the way that we think that they should and that the Tigers can get a good seed. Fingers crossed that in the top 16 that we're going to see tonight, the Memphis Tigers are included. They should be included. All right, when we come back, we will get into the Memphis Grizzlies player grades heading into the All-Star break. I do have a few A's to give out, but they may not be to who you think. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 99 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for the big man. It is time for us to hand out player grades heading into the All-Star break for the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies have the second best record they have ever had heading into the All-Star break, and they are one of the most injured teams in the NBA this season still. So it's been a pretty successful first part of the NBA season for the Grizzlies. Does that mean they're perfect? No. Very much like we just talked about with the Memphis Tigers, they certainly have some things that they need to work on. I'll talk about that a little bit more with Parker Fleming when he comes on at 6 o'clock, so make sure you stick around for that. But for right now, we have to hand out player grades. And a little bit of a spoiler alert, because they do have the second best record they have ever had. They are second in the Western Conference right now. Not many failing grades for the Grizzlies this go-around. Most of the grades are pretty good. But we're going to go player by player and give them a grade. We are also going to give grades to the two players who are no longer with the Memphis Grizzlies, Jake LaRavia and Marcus Smart. The way it's going to work is I'm going to have George go down the roster, and then I will give you my grade, and then George, you have to tell me yay or nay on the grade, and we will discuss. All right, George, who's the first player we must grade?
Numero uno, Santi Aldama.
Santi.
Santiago.
So for me, Santi has been one of the biggest surprises of the Grizzlies season. One of the reasons I think that we saw the activity the Memphis Grizzlies had at the NBA trade deadline was because they're getting ready to pay a guy like Santi Aldama, because he is still a very young basketball player. He is only 24 years old. He is a 7-footer, but he is going to require a good amount of money this NBA offseason. I think he deserves to be paid. He should be a part of this Memphis Grizzlies future. I'm going to give Santi an A. I'm going to give Santi Aldama an A this season. He's helped you win a lot of basketball games. I think he has a case for Sixth Man of the Year. If he can stay healthy, if he can have a good close to the season, he'll be in the conversation. I'm not sure he'll win it, but I do think he'll be in the conversation. Might get a couple of votes thrown his way. Santi has made a significant leap this year as a player. Last year, we were a bit disappointed in his play. We don't have to lie about that. We thought that Santi was going to have the leap last year, especially because the opportunity was there. But it seems like after the Olympics, something clicked with him. And you kind of saw it during the Olympics. You're like, oh, wait a second. If this Santi can come to the Memphis Grizzlies this year, I think they're going to have a lot of success. And that's exactly what has happened. So I'm going to give Santi Aldama an A grade for this season. George, what say you?
Completely agree on the A grade. The only thing, instead of Sixth Man of the Year, I would probably lean towards Most Improved Player.
Oh, well, that's not going to happen.
But I know that's not going to happen.
Because we give those are only for All-Stars, George. Did you not know that NBA All-Stars are the only ones who are allowed to win the Most Improved Player Award for some reason?
Absolutely ridiculous. But again, like you said, he's only 24 years old. He is in line for a nice pay increase after this season. The big thing for me with him coming back from the Olympics and playing as well as he did over there, I think it's almost also a bit of the Tomas Isalo factor.
Absolutely.
The more Euro style of offensive play. I'm like, wow, you know, for some reason, that really suits him. Interesting how that works. But yeah, I agree with the A grade for Santi Aldama. Next up on the list, Marvin Bagley III.
Oh yeah, Marvin, an incomplete. We have no grade for Marvin. We can move past him. I have hopes for him. I do think that he'd be the fifth big.
Yeah.
At the end of your rotation, it's not the worst thing in the world by any means. I do think if any team can unlock anything within Marvin Bagley, it is the Memphis Grizzlies, considering their player development. Pete and Brevin were talking about him on the broadcast the other night because, of course, he hasn't played. He's dealing with an odd ankle sprain. It's every time the Grizzlies have an injury, I swear to God, it's like new injuries get invented. That only happens in Memphis. When you go and you read what actually happened to him, I'm like, I don't even know what half of those words are. So, yeah, it's a new injury that has been invented because he is a Memphis Grizzly for Marvin Bagley. But if any team can do it, Pete and Brevin were talking about, this is the first time in his entire career he's been in a winning situation, a real winning situation. So I do wonder if something will be unlocked in Marvin Bagley. He put 20-7 on the Grizzlies just a few months ago. There's still something there. Again, they're not going to have to depend on him in any way. So him being at the end of the bench, not the worst thing in the world. Can be a physical basketball player. He's a plus rebounder. I'm glad he's on the roster. I'm glad it seems like he's going to stick around. But we got to give him an incomplete. We cannot grade Bagley. We haven't seen him.
Desmond Bane.
Okay, Desmond Bane's an interesting conversation because you have some people within the fan base, I think, that would give Desmond Bane a lower grade. I think I'm going to give Desmond Bane a B+. I think I'm giving him a B+ because, yes, is Desmond Bane scoring the basketball at the rate that we are used to seeing him score the basketball at? No, but he is averaging 18-5-5 this season. He has been a really good defender. I think one of the most underrated aspects of Desmond Bane's game is his defense. He's been a little bit unhealthy this year, but he has played 43 games. In his last 10 games, though, he has really turned it up. He is averaging 20 points a game, 7 rebounds, 5 assists in his last 8 games by shooting 42% from 3. For the regular season, he's back up to shooting 39% from the regular season, which is very close to his career percentage of 41. I think that Desmond Bane came into the year, and he had to figure out his role within this new offense. He was still dealing with some injuries early on. The conversations about him coming off of the bench or being traded were brain dead to me. They never made sense. I don't understand what the hell was going on there. And no way should Desmond Bane be coming off the bench for this Memphis Grizzlies team. And no way should Desmond Bane be traded from this Memphis Grizzlies team. He's one of the best third options in the NBA. He has helped you win a lot of basketball games this year. And again, one of the most underrated aspects of his game is his defense. Now, Bane, if we could just get those turnovers down a little bit. That's all I ask. The reason I can't give you an A is in turnovers. I can't give you an A because of the turnovers and because of the slower start of the season. But I think you deserve a B+. I'll hear B. I'll listen to a case for B. But being the prince of positivity that I am, I'm going B+.
I would have given him, at my first thought was a bit lower, like in the B-, but upon doing a little bit more reflection and a little bit more digging, I'm going to give him a B, a solid B. I think what's been really...
I'll take B.
What's been very impressive about the way that he's really turned it on lately has been his efficiency. It hasn't been, okay, he's all or nothing from three. He's driving the lane a lot more. He's getting those easier buckets. His mid-range is looking pretty good. But like you said, he does have some of these turnover issues. The defense has been pretty awesome, especially from a guy who... we kind of expected to have that type of defensive presence, like just looking at his physical attribute. I mean, he's a big dude. He is a strong dude. Yeah. You just look at him on the court, and you're like, I don't want to get screened by that guy.
Short arms, though.
I don't want to get screened by that guy. But I do think that there's still a level that's a little bit more, that we can get a little bit more out of Desmond Bane. So I'm going to give him a B.
Okay, I'll accept B. I'll meet you in the middle. We'll call it a B for Desmond Bane. How about that?
Works for me. Brandon Clark.
Brandon Clark's getting an A from me.
B-C-A.
Brandon Clark's getting an A from me. I'll do an A- to make it not as a hot takey thing. But I think Brandon Clark deserves an A- at minimum. He's been one of the most important players for this Memphis Grizzlies team.
Yes.
You hear me say it almost every single show. Death taxes, Jaren Jackson Jr., Brandon Clark plus minus. He wins you basketball games. He's one of the most efficient players in the NBA. He's one of the best rebounders in the NBA. He's one of the best activity guys in the NBA. He started the season a little bit slow because he's coming off of an Achilles injury, which,
still,
I don't know if you know, kind of a big deal. Kind of a big deal when you tear your Achilles.
I'm aware.
He has looked very good for this Grizzlies team this season, though, and he is one of the most important pieces that you have. I am so happy that Brandon Clark survived the trade deadline. Because
yes.
I didn't really think he was going to get traded, but I had some fears of it. There were a couple trades out there where people were including him, and I said this on air. I said it to friends. I said it constantly. If Brandon Clark was included in the trade, I was saying no. You would have to be trading me Luka Doncic or Kevin Durant. You'd have to be trading me like a franchise-changing star. for me to be able to trade Brandon Clarke.
Because BC trade
he is so important to what this Memphis Grizzlies team does, specifically with their closing lineups. Their best closing lineups almost always include Brandon Clarke. And when he's in the game with a guy like John Morant, the rest of the bigs on the roster, the rest of the players on the roster in general need to watch what he does. His hands are always up. They never drop below his waist. He is always ready to catch the basketball. It is something that Zach Edey can learn from. You've always got to keep your hands up, because when there's a player as dynamic as John Morant out there, that ball is going to hit you in the face. It's going to hit you in the chest every once in a while. You got to be ready to catch it. I love the way Brandon Clarke plays basketball. Every time he plays basketball, it makes me happy. I am so happy he is healthy and back on this Memphis Grizzlies team. Brandon Clarke gets an A-minus for me.
I'll give him a B plus, because I agree 100% on a lot of these points, but that slow start, and for the role that they're giving him in that kind of like switch 4-5 role, with a lot of these more physical teams that the Grizzlies are struggling with, that's kind of where I see some of the issues with like the length and the size.
Sure.
But he's just fun to watch. Like Brandon Clarke, now that he has some of that explosiveness back in his lower body. I mean, again, we're talking about a catastrophic injury that he dealt with, an Achilles rupture. It is one of the most debilitating injuries any athlete can endure. And now he's getting some of his bounce back. I love just watching him, you know, from in the paint, just like right around the rim, that almost straight up and down bounce kind of push shot or floater. That's his money. I mean, every single time I'm like, that's going in.
Yeah.
And most of the time I'm right.
He's shooting 60% from the field this season.
And how much of it is that just...
Most of it's layups, putbacks, or that little bunny floater.
Yep. It's awesome. I love watching it. I'm giving BC a B plus. I can appreciate the A and A minus there.
Sick.
Johnny Davis.
Incomplete. Not even going to be on the team in a couple weeks, I think.
Probably not. Yeah. Incomplete.
Don't need him.
Zach Edey.
C. Zach Edey's a C.
Yeah.
I tend
to agree.
He has neither been great or bad for this team this season. He has had some very high moments. He has had some very low moments. It has been interesting. The Grizzlies are depending on a rookie big. They kind of have to this season. And we can get into whether or not that's front office stuff. But at the end of the day, Zach Edey is your starting center. And there have been a few moments this year where bigger physical bigs have been able to push him to the three-point line. They've been able to disrupt him a little bit. He's, oddly enough, done a little bit better against the more athletic ones. Mm-hmm. Sengun ripped him apart that one game, though. Sengun absolutely ripped him apart. Zubac got him one game. Steven Adams got him a game. Isaiah Hartenstein recently really got to him.
The work.
So he has had moments of struggling this season, without a doubt. But I also think that Zach Edey has had some really high moments for this team. Against the lesser teams in the NBA, he's been able to eat, and that's what you want to see from him. I've also seen steady improvement from Zach Edey this season. I do think that the facial injury, it delayed some of his improvement. It delayed some of that. Since the mask has hit, we've seen a couple of good games from Zach Edey, but there's just some inconsistency there. Every single night, you don't really know what you're going to get from him. You might get two or three games in a row where he's popping off like we just got a three-game stretch where it was like, oh, there's the vision. There's what Zach Edey could be.
Yes.
But he certainly has some areas where he has to improve if he wants to be a starting big in the NBA moving forward. I think he may be able to do that. I think his foot speed has actually been better than anticipated. What hasn't been better than anticipated has been a bit of a disappointment. Disappointment's a bit of a strong word, but it's lack for a better word here. His hands.
Yeah.
He's got to learn how to catch the basketball. And yes, he's rebounding at a very high rate, specifically on the offensive end, but there's also a lot of rebounds that he gets a hand on or two hands on that gets knocked away from him. He drops a lot of passes. He hasn't had the touch around the rim that I hoped that he would have. Like, specifically in that game against the Clippers, like when you were watching Zubac and you were watching Zach Edey and the differences between the two, Zubac was just, he had this touch around the rim that I thought Zach Edey would have a little bit more of by now. That's an area of improvement that we can see going forward. I do think that some of the pick and roll things, he's got to become a better screener, because as we've seen in recent weeks, Ja Morant needs more pick and roll opportunities. But to have pick and roll opportunities, you've got to have a big that can execute them every single time. And Zach Edey, you still see him kind of figuring that out. It's something he wasn't necessarily asked to do as much at Purdue, because he was asked to be back to the basket, we're going to throw you down the ball. If you have to reset, you have to reset, but you're always going to get the ball again. He's still figuring out his role within this offense, and some of the guys are still figuring out how to play with him. Again, the inconsistency of health with this team this season, I think, is one of the reasons we haven't seen him develop to the level that we had hoped to by now. Mm-hmm. I do have a little bit of worry of depending on a rookie big when it comes to playoff time. But overall, I think it's been a good season for Zach Edey. But I think that the fair grade for him is a C.
Completely agree, because the biggest thing there is the highs have been really nice. The lows have been
low,
pretty low.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that, especially with a lot of these young players between... and we're going to get to a lot of them, you know, Edey, Gigi Jackson, you know, Jalen Wells, these young players, is the development aspect of things. And we've seen clear development from Zach Edey. I'm giving him a C as well. Moving on to Jay Huff.
I'm going to give Huff a C, too. You know,
he's
been fine. He's had some huge moments. He was a fun player at the beginning of the season when they had a couple of injuries. Can't depend on him every single night, though. He gets cooked on defense a lot. He won Defensive Player of the Year in the G League, but I think that's because he had the counting stats mostly there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you can't depend on him on every single night. He's a DMP the last few weeks for a reason. He's always exciting when he's in there. I would have loved to see him in the dunk contest. I would have loved to see him in like the three-point competition or something like that.
That would have been fun.
He is electric when he's in there, but he doesn't have enough consistent play for me to give him anything more than a C. But hey, I'm happy that he's a Memphis Grizzly. He has contributed to winning basketball this season. I'm glad he's here, but very much like Zach Edey, I just think he's been a bit up and down, so I got to give him a C.
Gigi Jackson.
He's tough. He's tough.
We haven't
had a ton of Gigi Jackson this season, but I think I'm going to give Gigi a B minus B, somewhere between B minus and a B. He has had moments of being very high this season. You can see the talent there. You can see why he is so exciting moving forward. Gigi was one of those guys at the trade deadline that I thought was a non-starter. If the teams called and said, Gigi Jackson, you hang up the
Absolutely.
Telephone. Because I do think that this kid has all of the makings to be a star in the NBA. It's not the offense that I'm worried about with Gigi Jackson. It's the defense mostly. And that's the reason I can't give him more than a B right now. If he was playing better defense, I could give him more of a grade there. I have been pleasantly surprised by his activity with rebounding. I think that is something that he has improved on. He is, you know, he can score the basketball very well. But the defense is what he's got to work on. He's got to work on the defense. We've seen it the last few games. Teams are attacking him because he is having to defend some of the better players, and they are getting by him frequently. So that's one of the areas of improvement that Gigi can work on, but he's still one of the youngest players in the NBA. He's still one of the most talented players in the NBA. I love that he is a Memphis Grizzly, so I'll give Gigi Jackson a B for the season.
Based on some of the criteria that we've given some of these players, I'm going to, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, as in the grade to me is still, the grade is developing. I'm going to give him an incomplete.
Fair.
He's only played 12 games.
That's fair.
Averaging less than 18 minutes a game, and he has gotten zero starts. I understand they probably don't need him or want him to be starting games anyway.
Don't need him to.
Unless they absolutely need him to, and we're not there yet. But I've loved what I've seen from him. The athleticism, the activity on the offensive side, we definitely need to develop that defensive game. And of course, now Jaren Jackson Jr.
Has been truly one of the best seasons I think a Grizzly has ever had this year. I think he's going to make an All-NBA team. He's probably going to qualify to get that Supermax, which, again, is some of the reason we saw some of the moves that the Grizzlies made at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the disappointment you may have in those moves, but Jaren Jackson Jr. is an A++. He's an all-star. He's going to make All-NBA. If Victor Wembanyama wasn't alive and breathing, and if he wasn't going to qualify for the awards, I think that Jaren Jackson Jr. would have a case for Defensive Player of the Year. He's become one of the best two-way players in the NBA. He's one of the best ISO scorers in the NBA. When he gets going, you cannot stop him. He's been the most important player for the Grizzlies this season, and he's been the best player for the Grizzlies this season. I don't have much more to say. There's not really much more I can say about Jaren Jackson Jr. He is an A-plus professional, A-plus basketball player, and he is an A-plus for this season.
A plus, full marks. Moving on to Yuki Kawamura.
You know what? Screw it. Give him an A. It's
A
awesome.
A plus, baby.
Every time Yuki's in the game, it's electric television. And I think that Brevin
Yuki
and Pete pointed this out a few games ago. He respects the game of basketball. He respects
so
the game
much.
So much. He's not going to put up a shot just because fans want him to. At the ends of games, he respects the other team. He respects the game. He's electric every time he's in there. Yuki's getting an A.
The people love Yuki.
People love Yuki.
We are the people. Luke Kennard.
I'm going to give Luke a B.
That's
Luke a
fair.
B. I would give him a higher grade, except he doesn't shoot the ball enough. You know, it's he had about a month and a half where he was letting that thing fly. The last few games, I feel like he's been a little bit hesitant. They have gotten a few more guys back. Maybe he's feeling out what his role is. But I think that Luke Kennard's been a very important player for the Grizzlies. One of the best shooters, if not the best shooter in the NBA. I just need him to crank up that volume a little bit. His playmaking has been a huge surprise, pleasant surprise, surprise for the Grizzlies this season. He showed flashes of it when he was in Detroit, but he's really been able to put it on display this season for the Grizzlies. So I'm going to give Luke Kennard a B.
John Conchar.
C-.
He's been fine.
C minus.
He's been there.
He's been fine. When he gets in there, he rebounds the hell out of the basketball, but he gets cooked on defense a lot. He's not really knocking down the threes like he used to, but C minus. He rebounds the ball excellent.
Effort there.
Yeah.
Ja Morant. Here's the big one. This is
the big one.
Yeah,
this is the tricky one. I got to give...